We're talking hundreds of millions of dollars. We're talking close to $1 billion, $800 million for the entire need of the authority. I'm certainly, the thing is, we have a real problem right now, and we have to deal with it. We have to deal with the tools that we're given. We can't speculate about, well, if we all did X, it would be wonderful, or if we all marched on Washington, somehow Congress would miraculously quintuple the subsidies or something. You know, we're not in that era. And so is it my number one choice? No. But I have a responsibility to our residents and to our future residents to preserve these assets.
That was Paul Graziano from yesterday's program, and talking about what we face here in Baltimore with the privatization of half of our housing units. Baltimore is moving faster with this project than any other place in the United States. From all the records we're seeing across this country, nobody is moving as quickly as Baltimore on this. And we're talking about what this means for our city. And it's very real. It's, what's real is that what Paul Graziano said yesterday is a fact. And the fact is that there's only $4 million in the housing department's budget for maintenance. So can we do this in other ways? What are we facing in Baltimore when we have the degradation of public housing, people living, as he said, in the building that sits right beyond back of North Avenue, we call the Blue Building, right in Station North Arts, where there were such severe problems that they had to shut down elevator service in that building for a place that's full of disabled buildings and is a high rise. So Councilman Bill Henry's in the studio.
Thank you, Mark. Who
runs the housing committee in our city council. Good to see you, Bill.
Good morning, Mark.
And you're also running for state senate?
I am.
I've just put that out there as well since you're here. Jeff Singer's with us, founder and former executive director of Healthcare for the Homeless, who now teaches at the University of Maryland School of Social Work. Good to have you back.
Thank you, Mark.
Karen Wabeck is with us. Karen Wabeck is staff attorney with the Homeless Persons Representation Project. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Tony Simmons is back with us. He is a housing advocate, member of Housing Our Neighbors. And good to have you back in the studio, Tony.
It's always a pleasure, Mark.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. We want to hear what you're thinking about this. But let's talk about the reality. And I think one of the things that Paul Graziano was saying, was that could be played, was that the city housing department says it has its back against the wall, that we have a deteriorating housing stock, and that deteriorating housing stock is in a crisis mode. And this is the response that the city is saying has to happen, given what we face. Bill Henry.
Thanks, Mark. the first thing I want to say is that for anyone who read any of the earlier articles about this, I think there was one in The Brew and one in The Sun last week, I was quoted as saying that the city's Housing and Community Development Committee would have a hearing on this next Thursday, March 20th. That hearing has been changed. I was able to work with the president's office and with the housing department yesterday to get that hearing moved up to tomorrow night. We were able to get a Wednesday at 5 o'clock slot. There's only, understandably, one of those a week, and they're prized by the other committee chairs because they're televised on the city's cable channel 25, and because they're in the evening, it's easier for people to come to them. So the City Council's Housing and Community Development Committee will be meeting tomorrow evening. That's Wednesday, March 12th at 5 p.m. in the council chambers. Commissioner Graziano and his staff will be there to make a presentation and answer any questions that remain outstanding about the city's participation in the RAD program.
So, the reality is, we were talking about this yesterday as well, Jeff Singer, that the city's back is against the wall. So what is the city to do? I mean, this is what the federal government has plunked down for the city. RAD is what they've given us to deal with. What's the alternative?
there certainly are alternatives. We'll be talking about them, I think, today. I want to thank Councilman Henry for having this hearing tomorrow, and I hope there'll be some public testimony.
Oh, definitely. It's a public hearing. There'll be a presentation. The councilpeople will ask questions. Individuals from the public will be allowed to come up and make statements or ask questions, which then the committee can pass on to the housing department.
One of the principles of fair development is participation. Another is transparency. Many of us hadn't even heard of this program, a very, very important change in our patrimony. We all own public housing. And as with the story of Jacob and Esau and the selling of the patrimony for a mess of pottage, a public discussion of the implications of this and possible alternatives can only benefit everyone. And I'm not clear at all why we haven't had this discussion months ago, but I do appreciate the opportunity to do it now.
Well, I mean, so I do want to get into the heart of that. I mean, what is it we can really do? Are there alternatives the city could take besides what is happening, what Graziano and the housing department in the city are giving to us? It is true that part of what we'll hear, I mean, is that the city clearly did not want to talk about this until the brew broke the story. I mean, that seems to me to be fairly clear.
Well, if I could, the Homeless Persons Representation Project is one of a number of housing advocates that have been meeting quarterly with Commissioner Graziano over the last year and a half or so. And Commissioner Graziano was very upfront with advocates in those meetings that RAD was coming and that he planned on applying for RAD. We first heard about this in the fall of 2012, and there have been a number of meetings over the last year and a half at which RAD has been discussed.
And so it didn't come as a shock to you?
No. No. We have known that this was coming. It has moved very quickly of late, and we still have a lot of questions, I think, specifically about how the program is going to be, how the deals are going to be structured, and what it means in real life for our clients and tenants in the affected units.
And Tony, so you know about this as well, coming up.
Oh, yeah. One of the buildings everybody called the Blue Building, I used to be in that building every single day for 5 years. And I was there when it used to be all seniors. And when it became a mixed community, as they call it, the panic that set in with the seniors, they didn't know what was going to happen. They felt they was going to be pushed out. In fact, I was over there a couple of days ago, and I was talking to the residents there, and they were like, okay, here we go again. We're going to get pushed out. Where are we going to live? I heard that it's going to turn into a condominium. And the problem is the residents are always the last to know what's going to happen. So not only there at Pleasant View, over there at Drew Hill Lake Drive, I visit both of those buildings, places as well. And the same panic mode is happening over there because they're up in the air. They don't know what's going to happen to them and where they're going to live.
Why would they be in a panic mode?
Well, the city has not went over, no one from the city has went over there yet to explain to them what is happening to the building. All they're saying is this building is getting a just great facelift, and they're repairing everything inside the building, so people are feeling that, okay.
But Paul Graziano said on the show yesterday that he has talked to residents.
You know how many residents are in that building. He talked to a few, but he didn't go through that building and explain to every individual what's happening.
So let me ask you all here before we go to the phones here at 410-319-8888. We want to hear your thoughts. Many of you called in yesterday as we talked to Paul Graziano. I want to hear what you think should be done, is being done. I mean, what is it you think the housing market needs to do other than what they're doing?
I'd be happy to,
Jeff,
expound upon that a little bit. There's a huge backlog of capital needs. We know that. Nationally, it's about $26 billion. And the sort of facetious way in which the commissioner was talking about marching on Washington, well, some of us have been for 30 years, and I'd be delighted to have him join us. There's lots of advocacy that goes on in D.C., and he ought to be leading it. Because I know he cares about these issues. But turning over our public housing to private developers to make profits on it is the worst way to go. Now, we've seen the implications of privatization of public goods. For example, how has it worked with pensions being privatized? over the last 40 years? Well, the way it's worked is half of all Americans have no pension now. We've seen the way it works in prisons, privatizing prisons. There are lawsuits for every prison that's been privatized because of the way they treat the inmates. The parking meters in Chicago were turned over to a company, and now everyone in Chicago is wondering how they can get them back. Privatization of public goods is a really bad idea, and in fact, it's what's caused homelessness. But aside from that really important fundamental issue, what could we do with these buildings? Well, we propose that if they're going to be turned over to anybody, they should be turned over to the tenants. And the tenants could own them through a community land trust or a co-op so that profits will never be made on these buildings and they'll always be available to people who need help. That's number one. Number two is the city has floated $564 million of bonds over the last 8 years. As best I can tell, 1.8% of those bonds were for affordable housing. Now, maybe a few dollars more were. But the city has a huge bonding authority. They just bonded $126 million for Harbor Point. We can't think creatively about how to use that authority to rehab some of these buildings.
So what questions are you going to ask, Bill Henry? Well, I mean, are you satisfied this is the way we need to go?
Well, actually, Jeff raised an interesting point because when I was first briefed on this, the council was briefed a year after you. We were briefed last fall in the
So
the
you
fall,
knew about this
fall
coming
13.
As well. You weren't, yeah. taken, you weren't taken off guard by that.
I wasn't taken off guard, but it also, when they briefed us, they didn't say, this is a secret, don't tell anybody. I wasn't under the impression that they were trying to keep it quiet, as much as they were going around ahead of actually physically applying, telling council people, these are properties in your district that are going to be affected. For me, Ellerslie.
But let me ask this question directly, yeah. Bill. I mean, sure. So were you aware that 40% of the housing of Baltimore City was going to be placed in the hands of private nonprofit developers?
I was aware last October. At that point, they were talking about something more like 3,500 units, the number went up, that they were applying for that many units.
And do you think it's a good idea?
I think it's an interesting idea. I think that it has a lot of potential. The devil with these kind of things is in the details in terms of how individual aspects of it will be worked out. What I was going to say in terms of what Jeff was reminding me with the talking about the city's bonding authority is that when we had the conversation last fall, listening to their description of what was happening, I likened it at the time to similar to the mechanism that we're going to be using for the schools with the 10-year facilities plan, where we have a rather paltry and anemic stream of regular money coming to deal with a problem that's just too big to deal with that level of money. So we're trying to use that ongoing stream that's too small to fix things every year to pay the debt service on one big capital investment up front. The difference between what's happening with the schools and this is that the amount of money we were already regularly and routinely getting to do capital for the schools, while it wasn't sufficient to fix more than one or two schools big time each year, it was enough so that it alone leveraged about 40% of the total need if you could borrow that. What we're paying in terms of capital for right now every year for investment in public housing is like a fraction of that. So they needed more money in order to leverage a big enough capital improvement. And the additional money they're getting is the low-income tax credits that Congress has already been made available, and the only way they can access those credits is to actually sell the buildings to private developers.
So the leverage private developers are going to be using is for their own profit is the tax credit that is being leveraged that would be using for poor communities development. Is that right?
The profit is effectively the developer's fee. And that comes out of the low-income tax credit, but it is like a percentage. It's down around 10% of the actual tax credit. The developer's fee is like $27 million for the whole project, and the city is going to keep a chunk of that.
And the city gets $147 million from developers because they're buying these properties? Is that right?
I don't know that number. I know that the low-income tax credit is somewhere in the $120-140 million
range. What I'm asking, like,
this is one of the reasons why we're going to have a whole presentation tomorrow night.
But I think what's important is to understand what's happening here. I mean, so what does it mean that private companies are taking this development, and what would be the alternative?
I can grab one part of that, which is that right now the only significant amount of money coming out of Washington towards affordable housing requires private sector involvement. That's the problem. Now, should we have something else? Yes. Should there be a more, government-related stream of funding? Yes. But we don't have it now, and this is what they're trying to work with.
So let me ask you all three, what do you think the alternative should be? Now, how do we get there?
First, let's think about clever ways of using this law. The private developers that are getting these buildings are getting a higher rent than the housing authority gets for these buildings, between 110 and 120% of the fair market rent. That's part of this. Now, is there a way to capture that money without it going into the profits of private developers or into their fees? There may be. Are there waivers possible to get from HUD to do something like that? There may be. It's like with Medicaid. Every state has Medicaid waivers, 5 or 10. So that's a possibility. I still want to examine thoroughly the idea of the bonds, general obligation bonds, not to mention private housing bonds.
So that becomes the question. Could we be using bonds? Paul Graziano says we have a $300 million bill to rehab and fix our public housing. Residents need it. I mean, the places are abysmal. Nobody wants to live in these places because of the way they're not being kept up. What, Jeff?
Well, not exactly. Yes, the places need a lot of help, but I've visited and had clients in most of them. And, in many cases, they're no worse than the average apartment building. Of course people should have better housing. But people aren't necessarily fleeing from these places. And if we had a 10-year plan to do the work that needs to be done in 10 years, could we raise the money to do that in 10 years with the help of the state legislature and some help from HUD and some waivers and some creative thinking? I don't know. Maybe we could.
So one of the things Paul Graziano said in the show yesterday was that we would hurt our bond rating if we floated bonds, municipal bonds, to do this. Is that true?
I'm probably not the best person to ask, just because I'm the one that's gotten into fights with the finance department over what bond rating agencies really do or do not think about our actions. I personally think that that's something that the administration is oftentimes more worried about than they need to be. I will say this, that if we got about $4 million a year to do capital work, if we converted that into paying off debt service,
that's the question I had.
We could probably leverage.
What would be the debt service on $300 million bond to fix up our houses so they stay public and are not privatized?
A $300 million bond would probably be closer to $10 or $12 million.
If we had a ballot measure, and then we'll come back to this stuff we're talking about here with other guests. But if we had a ballot measure that allowed us to have municipal bonds to begin to fix the structures we're talking about, and it was and that $4 million we use to fix these places could be one quarter or one half of the $300 million we need, could we save housing, keep it public, not privatize it, and give people the kind of housing they need?
But we couldn't do that in-house. We'd have to do what they did with the school system. We'd have to go to the General Assembly. We'd have to create a separate authority to do that. The city couldn't absorb $300 million more in bonds on its own.
We're going to take a quick break here and come back and wrestle with this and bring all the guests back in this conversation. Also gets the phones at 410-319-8888. And we're going to go out with, there's the man. This is the day that made number one, sitting on the dock of the bay. Is that what we're doing here? Sitting on the dock of the bay? We need to be doing more. Stay with us.
Roll away again. Yeah. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll.
That was Sonny Terry. That was Dealing with the Devil by Sonny Terry. So is that the issue we're dealing with here? Are we dealing with the devil and not dealing with reality? I mean, we were just talking about during the break with our four guests here, Jeff Singer, who remains an activist after helping found healthcare for the homeless and being its executive director, Councilman Bill Henry, Karen Wabeck, who is staff attorney for Homeless People's Representation Project, Tony Simmons, a housing advocate who has been homeless himself and is part of Housing Our Neighbors. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages, which I'm going to check out right now. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. Bruce, you're the first caller up. We're going to come to your call in a moment. 410-319-8888. But is that part of the issue? I mean, how would we be better served? Would we be better served, A, in this process of privatizing our public housing? Or can we use the money, can the city allocate more money in its budget for a debt service that would allow us to bring more money in en masse to hire more workers to fix the housing and let the tenants actually run the housing they live in?
The city
as a community land trust.
I mean, it's all one of the options is always for the city to just spend more of its own money on this. That's a trade-off. It means that the city is spending less capital dollars on something else that we do. It means we're not repairing roads somewhere. It means we're not fixing a bridge somewhere. It means we're not repairing some other city-owned building besides a public housing building. So, yes, there's always that option. We could say that we want to take the $4 million that we're already giving the Housing Authority to do capital work every year. We're going to give them another $6 million on top of that. And then with that $10 million, we'd have all the money that they need to pay debt service on a $300 million bond issue, and they could do this without having to access the low-income tax credits and involve private developers, and all we would have to do is give up $6 million worth of other capital projects for the next 30 years.
So as an advocate, legal advocate for the poor, for the people in public housing, what are your thoughts on this, Karen? I mean, I know you can't talk about public policy. Your job is not to deal with public policy, but it is in some levels.
Sure. I honestly don't know if RAD is something that can be stopped at this point. But I think what is clear is that in order to be able to intelligently evaluate these various options, we need more information, and hopefully we will start to get that information that we need tomorrow night at the city council hearing. We need to know, of course, the Housing Authority has told advocates this should look and feel just like public housing. I don't know. We have concerns about admissions and screening criteria. Of course, RAD does not allow for rescreening of existing tenants in these RAD-converted properties.
Say that again?
RAD does not permit these developers who would be taking over the buildings to rescreen existing tenants. But it would allow for, as there's vacancies, attrition, it would allow incoming tenants to be screened. And our position is that the screening criteria should be what the criteria are for public housing.
So are we saying this is something that Paul Rosano was kind of dodging on yesterday when I asked these questions. So are we saying that if people who own these properties that are privatized, they can determine who's allowed to have this housing and who's not?
For incoming
tenants. So that the answer is yes to that then?
Yes. And I think...
So how could that be allowed? How can we allow somebody who makes a profit on public housing to determine who can live in that house?
Well, I think the Housing Authority is hoping to negotiate with the developers about what those screening criteria will be. We have an early indication that there are going to be some significant changes from the current screening and criteria for public housing. And that is of great concern to housing advocates.
Tony, what do you have to say about this?
I agree. African Americans and African American communities, we have a history of being lied to. I remember I used to live in Lafayette Project, and the city promises that we're going to be able to go here and go there, and they lied. And that is what's causing the panic that Mr. Graciano says is not happening. People down there are going, okay, will my rent change? Am I able to stay here? What's going to happen when new people come in? Are they going to push us out? So that's happening in every one of the buildings that I have visited over the last couple of days. So when you mention the word privatized, That means somebody's coming in and now they're going to own it. Now they can control it and do whatever they want. That is what's causing the panic down there.
I do want to get to the phones here. Bubby, we're going to go to Bubby before Bruce because it's something he wants to raise. I want him to raise on the air here. Let me ask this one quick question. Why is it, if RAD is not, for argument's sake, if RAD and the privatization of our housing, public housing, is not necessarily the best interest of our tenants, you can argue that argument, why is it too late to stop it?
Well, the way our local government is set up, a lot of the power and the authority to handle public housing is concentrated in the Housing Authority, which has almost no institutional connection to the City Council. They have to do some monetary contracts through the Board of Estimates, and so they deal with the mayor. But, I mean, the hearing that the council is having tomorrow evening is not a hearing on a resolution or a bill that is required to be passed in order for this to happen. This is purely a legislative oversight informational hearing because there is no legislative aspect to this program. The city has the Housing Authority applied. The Housing Authority was approved for a certain number of units, and they're going to proceed on their authority.
So I'm going to go to the phones here. We have a number of people calling in, emails coming in, and I want to get back to you to come back in this conversation, Jeff, about responding to some of this. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Bubby, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Welcome.
I'm an employee of the Baltimore City Housing Authority, and I feel like we're being thrown under the bus by this commissioner. This commissioner has been the commissioner for 12 years. Y'all ask him questions, what have he done? Why did he continue to bring people, not Maryland citizens or Baltimore citizens, to run the Housing Authority? And he has pushed the union under the bus. And every union in Baltimore City should be worried that the same cruddy stuff they did to the Housing Authority, Local 647, that they will do to you. We must come together and stop this. Why the mayor so quiet? Why the mayor not stepping in and stopping Mr. Graziano? Why no one want to talk to the union officials so they can bring the dirt to light? I thank you very much.
Well, Bubby, before you hang up, let me ask a question. What do you mean throwing the union under the bus? What does that mean?
Say again?
What do you mean by throwing the union under the bus? Yeah,
because now all the information being put out by Mr. Graziano, like the employees haven't been doing their job. Sir, you need to come to these developments and see what kind of condition we work in. You need to look at our budget. We don't have winter coats. We don't have proper boots. We are freezing. Half of us are bow-legged when we came in walking straight because these boots are killing our feet. Our trucks is not safe. We're working in condition where people are being murdered, and we are asked to work in those same conditions. And Mr. Graziano is trying to push us under the bus because his administration has not done what they're supposed to do.
Well, Bubby, I'd be glad to walk with you through those buildings. If you will leave your number, I will walk with the workers with our microphones and camera. You can show me what you want to show me.
I have to give you my number.
Hold on a second. Don't hang up. Producer will get it. So why shouldn't the city council listen to what the unions are saying about this?
We should, and we will, tomorrow evening at 5 o'clock in the city council
chamber. So they can testify tomorrow?
Sure. I would be disappointed if they wouldn't. One of the union officials already reached out to my office.
We have an email here from Lauren saying the RAD plan will increase homelessness. When people are given Section 8 vouchers, 50% of the people given vouchers are unable to find a safe, suitable, or accessible apartment. Additionally, people with vouchers must pay their own utilities, which are included in public housing, and vouchers are inadequate response to housing. The poor public housing needs to remain public in order to ensure housing for our poorest and most vulnerable neighbors. Lauren.
Could I supplement that by reading from the RAD RFP? People can be denied housing if they cannot prove that they can obtain utilities in their own name.
The new residents.
Yes, the new residents
right.
will have to be able to prove that they can obtain utilities in their own name. I cannot tell you how many people in Baltimore City fall behind on their utilities because they can't afford them. There are close to 8,000 utility turnoffs every year. And social workers all over the city try to find money to help people pay their utility bills. Lots of people can't have arrearages, can't get utilities in their own name. They'll be barred from these buildings.
So this is where the rub is. And you mentioned earlier, Karen, that part of the problem with RAD, and this is something I think if the city thinks they cannot stop it, and that's a discussion you should have, but one of the things the city should be doing is to ensure that if this RAD goes through, that the new residents are not put in a position where they are forced to pay their own utilities and forced to be told they can't have public housing.
Correct. There is, in the draft screening criteria that was in the RFP, there are several concerns, but the most significant of which is credit screening and very stringent credit screening, which the Housing Authority currently doesn't do for public housing residents other than looking at debts that might be owed to itself. So these criteria are a big change. It would be honestly screening out most, if not all, of my clients. And it's not clear to me what the connection is between rehabbing these buildings and monkeying with the screening criteria.
Let me go back to the phones here. 410-319-8888. I apologize to Bruce. I said it was first. There's people calling in from housing. I want to get them on. And housing activist Brendan Walsh is calling. I want to get him on. And Bruce, we'll get you on as well. 410-319-8888. Peter, you're on the air.
Hi, it's Peter Engel and Anthony Scott, both with HABC, which is the Housing Authority of Baltimore City.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing I'd like to do is clarify that this is a program, a preservation program for public housing that is run by the Housing Authority, not by the city. Today, the city doesn't contribute to public housing, doesn't contribute to these 11,000 units we have, and not the 4,000 units we're planning to convert. So if the city were interested in starting to contribute to public housing, that would certainly be something to discuss. As it is, public housing is paid for entirely by the federal government, so they provide an operating subsidy to the Housing Authority and a capital subsidy.
So let me interrupt you for a second, Peter. So you're saying the $4 million we were talking about to keep for rehabbing and fixing the units in public housing are federal dollars, not city dollars, right?
Right. There are no city dollars. The Housing Authority is a separate legal entity under state law. It is not a city agency. Now, it has a city jurisdiction, but it's not a city agency. So there's no city money going into public housing. Asking the state for money for public housing, asking the city for public housing money would be a major transformation of the public housing program, which has been a federal obligation since its inception in 1937.
Right.
So that's one point I'd like to clear up. And again, we'd certainly be interested in talking about that, but it would be a major and different, very different ask. And different from school funding, which has been a local government and state government obligation, you know, for many, many years. There's never really been a federal obligation.
So, Peter, let me ask you to hold on. I mean, you can, if you'd like, you can remain in this conversation through the end of the hour. You can bring in your other issues in, but just so I can kind of manage all the moving parts here. So, please, can you stay on for a minute?
We'll be happy to participate.
Pardon?
Right. It's also possible I can comment on the question about how the residents have been informed about this process. My name is Anthony Scott. I'm Deputy Executive Director of the Housing Authority.
Okay.
We met with our residents early on, before even the time frame that you heard from Councilman Henry and also from our advocates, and let them know that we were interested in the RAD program and interested in applying. Once we made a decision that we were going to apply, we actually, prior to actually submitting our application, we met at every single site that has been selected for RAD and met with all the residents that attended the meeting and let them know what was happening with RAD, the answers that we had at the time, what we were planning to do, and how we were planning to do it. Subsequently, after we were awarded the RAD program, we've had meetings with residents as well. Particularly, we've been very much involved with meeting with the resident leadership, the resident advisory board, headed by Ms. Ella Broadway. So there have been several meetings that have happened between the developers and the resident leadership since the announcement of us going forward with the RAD program. So there's not a gap in communication there. Now, granted, you know, there are hundreds of people who live in the buildings and not all attend meetings, but we've announced the meetings publicly. We've encouraged our resident leadership to pass on questions and information about what's happening with the RAD program.
And Mark, I will hold on, but I could just clear up a couple things quickly.
Very quickly, because we have a lot of people calling in.
I know, but just very quickly, some misinformation. One, it's not a voucher program, so people are not given vouchers. They stay in their building. The Section 8 is attached to the building. Two, Utilities are going to be are not going to be passed on to the residents. They're not going to need to get utilities in their own names. I had a conversation with a developer yesterday about this. It's specifically not something we're doing because we know residents would have issues with utilities. And three, in terms of screening in general, people will be coming off our public housing waiting list. The screening criteria we have in place, and which the residents, the new owners, which include us, must use, have something that was worked out over a long period of time with advocates, including the Maryland Disability Law Center and Legal Aid. We're comfortable that it does not screen out most of the clients, particularly for the Disability Law Center, who has a lot of clients which may have issues with credit and with criminal backgrounds. And that those will be useful for keeping the same resident pool being in these buildings for the life of this program until we reacquire the project.
So let me bring people back in because we have a lot of people calling in. I promise I get back to the phones. Peter and Anthony, you can stay on with us. But here, let me very quickly raise these issues because my reading and understanding of the RFP is that these have not been cleared up yet.
Right. The last meeting that the advocates had with the Housing Authority was in September of 2013. The advocate sent a letter to Commissioner Graziano in late January of 2014 requesting a meeting to discuss RAD, and it contained a list of a lot of questions. And that meeting is scheduled to happen tomorrow. So, in fact, we have not had a conversation with the Housing Authority since it applied for RAD. And so I am not comfortable with the screening criteria that were in the RFP as written. We have questions about the waiting list. The Housing Authority has said and is saying that the developers will be required to pull from the public housing waiting list. The RAD notice says something different. It says, this is the RAD notice from HUD, that there'll be site-based waiting lists. Now, it's possible that the Housing Authority has applied for a waiver of some sort, but we haven't heard or seen that yet. So that is among our many questions about how RAD will work here in Baltimore City.
So let me go back to the phones here. And this you can see, folks, as you're listening here in the Steiner Show at 410-319-8888, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, that there are a lot of questions here. And this is going to be one of the issues that the Steiner Show is going to dedicate a huge amount of time to until it's straightened out and clear, whatever that means, because public housing is critical. And we know that there are almost 90,000 people, families in the city, that are housing insecure. This is not a small issue in a city with 190-some thousand families when that many people in our community are housing insecure. And we're talking about 4,000 units, give or take, out of 8,000-some units, and we're talking about 89,000 families, so many more people can fit into the units that we even have at the moment. So this is not a small and minor issue in our cities. We're trying to create a city for all its people to develop together. 410-319-8888. Brendan, then Bruce, very quickly, both of you. Brendan, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, Mark and Jeff. This is one of the great shows you've had on. So
hi, Brendan.
To get some sort of truth out. The only thing I'd like to say is we have friends in Detroit, and Detroit's a city now that's not even run by elected officials. It's run by an emergency management group. And the corporations are really running the show in Detroit. And increasingly, as they privatize things in the city, corporations are running it. And I think Jeff's suggestion that people take over the buildings is a far better way to go than to rely on the federal government or the city or state government. In reality, there's not going to be any federal funds for anything with Congress the way it is and with the war-making that goes on. But I think, I hope you keep doing these, and I think programs like Jeff's talking about, I think, is the way to go. Thanks a lot, though. This is a great show.
Thank you, Brendan Walsh. Good to hear from you. Were you going to say something, Karen? I'm sorry.
Yes, one of the ideas that the advocates have raised with the Housing Authority as a possibility with respect to RAD is a secondary buyback right for the tenant association. So the Housing Authority has said that it will ensure that in these deals, the Housing Authority itself has a right of first refusal at the end of the contract term. So it will have the first option to buy the buildings back. And what we have suggested is that if the Housing Authority, for whatever reason, is not able to do that, that the tenant associations have a second right to purchase the buildings to ensure that they remain affordable in the long term.
I'm sorry.
And that's something that the Housing Authority, I don't know that they had considered, but they seemed open to hearing and were anxious to hear more about if there are plans for a tenant buyback right.
So let me turn to you, Bill Henry. As chairman of the Housing Committee on the Baltimore City Council, you're listening to this conversation. What does that say to you about the agenda you think needs to happen in terms of what questions need to be answered?
Well,
what possibilities we need to talk about where we might be able to go?
The question I'm somewhat torn here because I don't know how we're going to deal tomorrow with a situation if the housing authority says, well, we've made it clear that there isn't going to be this type of screening and residents will not have to pay their own utilities, and then we have members of the public coming in and saying, but it says you're going to have to do this and you're going to have to do this. I don't know how we're going to handle that if it's just a, well, you're saying this, but you're saying this.
Doesn't that mean to you, though, as chairman and somebody, even though I know you don't have control of it, but you're chairman of the people can at least investigate it, even though it's a mayoral power that you have difficulty getting through to sometimes, but can't you say that we need to have this on paper? We need to see, where is it in black and white?
Yes.
That said, this is what, where's the sign here saying developers and housing authority agreed, this is what we're going to do.
And assuming that Peter and Anthony are still on the line, I think that they're hearing loud and clear that they're going to have to come tomorrow, or more accurately, Commissioner Graziano is going to have to come in tomorrow with the things that are being said in writing, you know, so that people can take them back with them, share them with people, have something to point to years later when questions are being asked.
Yeah. So let me do this. Let me get Bruce very quickly online, very quickly, because Glenn Middleton has called in, who's president of the union. I want to hear what he has to say. Bruce, very quickly, go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, it actually needs more time, but here's part of the problem. So part is funding. So supposedly city and state doesn't contribute to this. So all along, the city and states finds all kind of energy and time for funding, for floating bonds, for all type of private investment. I don't want to get started on it, but it's like, okay, the Grand Prix, stadiums, $7 million in federal funds was used to pave the roads downtown when it was really about is to bring in open wheel races. Okay, it's the stadium authority. So how many years ago, what's it been? 10 years, 20 years ago, 20 years ago? The Maryland State created a whole Maryland Stadium Authority. They created all kind of lottery tickets and all to raise funds for that. And now they want to bring gambling, a casino in here. So what happens is all the private investors, all these big money people, they kiss the butts of all these politicians and donate money so they get private funding, so they get public funding or they get tax breaks, and that's all right.
And let me go to Glenn Middleton. Glenn, you're on the air, 410-319. Glenn, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Good morning,
Glenn.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
Very well. We have like 4 minutes left, Glenn, so I want you to get
okay,
your
I'll be
in.
Fast and put Councilman Henry to your guest. It's just that the RAD program has a major, major issue that affects over 1,000 workers. Out of 1,000 workers, over 200 to 300 will lose their jobs. They're not even talking about that. And then they met with the union. They met with AFSCME, our members, in October. This has been going on way before then. No one, none of this information was shared with us whatsoever. And then Graziano and his folks refused to negotiate with our members. We need to negotiate on issues like this because it's what we don't call it privatization anymore. We call it outsourcing. They're outsourcing our jobs. And then these developers that are coming in, we don't know who they are. You don't know where they're coming from. You don't know anything about them. And then the jobs are not going to be secured for the workers that come out of housing. As I close out, Mark, what's really important is these workers, over 300 of the workers, maybe 200, were actually living in the development. They live in these developments. And they got their jobs through an apprenticeship program that we started. Anthony Coates, the president of housing, ran that apprenticeship program. They were third-generation folks with no jobs whatsoever, and they graduated from the program, and they became Housing Authority employees. I just wanted to share that because I know that there's a hearing tomorrow.
Are you testifying tomorrow?
I probably will be. I might change my schedule so I can do it. But we're going to be there. We will be there.
Good. I mean, I think the unions need to be there to have that voice heard. And this is a very complex thing. This what I was trying to get to during the courses program today was to really reflect on the complexity of this. This is not as simple as saying this is the only thing the city can do. It's not as simple as saying that it's a done deal and there are no parts that have to be addressed and understood by the public and the unions and the housing residents and more before it is a completely done deal, which is why we're doing this today before the hearing. What we will do is, once the hearing takes place Wednesday night, even if we have to tape a show Thursday afternoon to get it back to you on Friday to hear what's going on, we will do that, because this is a critical issue that we will stay on top of here on the Mark Steiner Show on WEA 88.9 FM, because we need to have this straight. We're talking about the lives of hundreds of thousands of residents of the city of Baltimore, not just people living in public housing at the moment, but what happens in the future. So I want to thank everybody for being here today. Councilman Bill Henry, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Mark.
Look forward to hearing what happens tomorrow night at your hearing that you're going to be chairing. Jeff Singer, founder and executive director of Healthcare for the Homeless. Always good to have you on the studio with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
What you've done for the show and for our city. Karen Wapik, good to have you in the studio from Healthcare for Homeless Persons Representation Project.
Thank you.
Tony Simmons is with us, housing advocate, member of Housing Our Neighbors. Always good to have you in the studio.
Thank you, Mark.
And I thank our friends from the Housing Authority for calling in and bringing in the point of view. I'm glad you were listening and became part of that. We're going to go to break with Cheryl Lynn. This is her birthday, I think. Birthday? I'm going to break with Gotta Be Real. And that is the right song to go to break with, Gotta Be Real.